Today, are you feeling wealthy then? The wages and inflation problem. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, I've noticed post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. So the question is, are you feeling less wealthy these days? Well, stock markets are down, superannuation funds diminished, and property prices are sliding, as Chris Joy's latest missives show. So the answer to my question is probably yes, unless you're a politician still receiving generous pay rises, or a high-flying executive, or you are working in high-demand areas like IT, or finance, or perhaps even construction. And those in the public sector are most likely to be saying yes, even louder. The Australian Institute last November said that Australian workers are about to have 12 years of real wages growth wiped out in 3 years, as the Reserve Bank's November statement on monetary policy revealed, when it showed just how badly Australian workers are being hit by the current weak growth in wages and fast rising inflation. In August, the Reserve Bank was anticipating that wages in the 12 months to December this year would rise at 3%. This has now been increased to 3.1%. That would suggest a better situation for workers, but unfortunately the RBA has increased its estimate for inflation for the same period from the 7.8% it had in August to now 8%. So that represents a real wage fall of 4.54% compared to its estimate in August of 4.45%. All up, the new estimates out to the end of 2024 suggest that real wages by December 2024 will be 2.2% lower than they were in June last year. That is, again, worse than the 1.8% fall estimated in August last year. But comparing real wages from June last year misses out on the massive falls that were already occurring. By the end of 2024, the Reserve Bank now estimates that real wages will be some 5.4% below where they were in March 2020, just before the pandemic occurred. It means that at the end of 2023, workers will, on average, only be able to buy the same amount of items and services with their wages as they were 15 years earlier, back in December 2008. So 12 years of real wage growth will have been wiped out in 3 years due to 14 consecutive quarters of prices rising faster than wages, a truly awful collapse of living standards. And yet, the Reserve Bank of Australia Governor Philip Lowe has sought to put a lid on wages growth of about 3.5% and warned regular pay rises of 4 to 5% risk entrenching higher inflation. Dr. Lowe flagged the need for real wages cuts, saying annual rises in the mid-threes was a good anchoring point for employers and unions, even while inflation was forecast to reach well above 7% by the end of the year. Now, his comments came after the Fair Work Commission delivered a rare split increase that lifted the minimum wage for 184,000 workers by 5.2% and 4.6% for about 2.6 million workers on higher rewards last year. And following the decision, Industrial Relations Minister Tony Burke told the Australian Financial Review advice to him was wage rises of headline inflation plus productivity growth would not be inflationary. But Dr. Lowe said inflation will remain above the target band for years and the RBA would do what was necessary to pull it down. And while pay rises above 3.5% for a short period of time were possible, he warned a wage price spiral would force aggressive rate rises that slowed the economy and pushed unemployment higher. If wage increases became common in the 4 to 5% range, then it is going to be harder to return inflation to 2.5%, he said last year in a speech to the American Chamber of Commerce. I was complaining when they started with a 2. I hope I don't get into an environment where I'm complaining that they have a 5 in front of them, he said. 3.5 is the anchoring point that I want people to keep in mind. I know it's difficult when inflation is higher than that, he said, in response to a question from the Financial Review. Dr. Lowe added that in the 1970s, we got into trouble because wages growth responded mechanically to the higher inflation rate. We had higher inflation, wages responded, and that became persistent. A similar outcome in coming months would mean interest rates would need to go much higher than otherwise and spark an economic downturn to get inflation under control. I'm hopeful we can avoid that, he said. Firms have become more willing to pass on cost increases to consumers, and in the tight labour market, employers were demanding higher wages as compensation for higher living costs, the board minutes noted. In such an environment, there is a heightened risk of persistently high inflation, especially if expectations of higher inflation become entrenched. And although interest rates will move higher, Dr. Lowe said in June that a 4% official interest rate by the year of end, as tipped by financial markets, was unlikely, even while acknowledging investors had been better judges over recent years. Well, we got to 3.1%, and of course, markets are now looking for rates to head toward 4% next year as inflation grinds on. I don't see a recession on the horizon, he said, adding that unemployment was at a 48-year low and record terms of trade, but cautioned that the past 2 years had taught the bank you can't rule anything out. Now, warning of the lessons of the 1970s when inflation shocks altered people's expectations of how quickly prices would rise, Dr. Lowe said the path to get inflation back to the RBA's 2-3% target band would be easier to navigate if inflation psychology did not shift too much. But if it did, the period of higher inflation would persist and it would be more costly to reverse, he said, adding that to date expectations had not shifted markedly from the 2-3% annual target. And he said moving swiftly to raise interest rates had an important role to play in keeping expectations low and ensuring spending increased broadly in line with the economy's capacity to meet the demand for goods and services. Of course, the truth is the RBA created the problem in the first place by taking interest rates too low and flooding the economy with too much liquidity. So it's a bit rich, to my mind, that he's then saying that we, ordinary Australians, should hunker down and take a pay cut when he created the problem. But this is not just an Australian problem either. In fact, global wages have fallen in real terms this year for the first time since comparable records began, according to the International Labour Organization, arguing that there was scant evidence for pay pressure stoking inflation. The UN agency's annual report on pay showed that global monthly average wages in the first half of 2022 were 0.9% lower in real terms than a year earlier, marking the first outright fall in worldwide living standards in the 15 years for which the ILO has published data. The drop was steepest in the developed world, where inflation picked up earlier. The ILO said that among G20 economies, which account for about 6% of the world's wage employees, real wages had fallen 2.2% year over year in advanced economies. Across G20 emerging economies, wages growth slowed but remained positive at 0.8%, but this was in large mainly due to China's resilience, with other major countries such as Brazil hit hard. The report's lead author said that with inflation still stubbornly high, despite aggressive action from central banks, global wages were also likely to fall in real terms over 2022 as a whole. Labour's share of global income is declining, they said, noting that productivity growth, measured in terms of output per worker, had in 2022 outstripped wages growth by the biggest margin since 1999. The ILO said that where productivity was now outpacing pay, governments should do more to protect workers from the cost of living crisis, in particular by mandating higher minimum wages without running the risk of driving inflation up further. There would appear to be scope in many countries for increasing wages without the fear of generating a wage price spiral, the report said. And the ILO also noted that the latest erosion of real wages was compounding the losses many workers had incurred during the pandemic and the longer-term stagnation in living standards in a few countries, including the UK, one of four G20 economies where wages were still lower in real terms than they were in 2008 when the global financial crisis hit. Central bankers have been watching wage developments closely because they're concerned that high inflation will become entrenched if workers demand pay rises to match rising living costs, spurring companies to keep increasing their prices as their wage bill grows. Even though wages are lagging behind inflation, they are rising in nominal terms at a pace unprecedented in many countries, and many central bankers see that as incompatible with their inflation targets. For example, the Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey said last year that UK pay awards at around 6.5% were well above where you'd expect in any normal situation. While they were not out of line with the Bank of England's forecasts, given the current circumstances, that's not to say I like it, he said, while adding that pay settlements should be structured in ways that gave more protection to the lowest paid. And Philip Lane, the chief economist at the European Central Bank, said in a blog post last year that even if high wage growth put upward pressure on inflation over the next 2 to 3 years, this would not necessarily lead to any lasting changes in wage dynamic after an initial catch-up phase. But he also said Eurozone wage growth looks set to accelerate, underlining the need for the ECB to bring inflation back to target swiftly so that people did not come to see high inflation as normal and behave accordingly. Now, back in September, the RBA assured us that nominal wages growth has increased as labour demand recovered rapidly since the mid-2020s. Unemployment rates and vacancy to unemployment ratios are all at their strongest levels in a few decades, with a high share of firms in many advanced economies citing difficulty in finding workers. The increase in wages growth in advanced economies has, in most cases, been broadly in line with what would have been predicted by the relationship between unemployment rates and wage growth over the 2010s. However, the recovery in labour supply in the US and the United Kingdom from the pandemic was incomplete, adding to pressures on labour markets there. Consistent with this, wages have been growing notably faster in the US than would have been expected from the relationships between the 2010s and are more in line with the relationships seen in the decade before the pandemic. No wonder then that we see a rapid rise in industrial disputes in the UK, for example. But while nominal wages growth has picked up, it has not been able to keep pace with the rapid rise in inflation. This has resulted in significant declines in real wages in many economies over the past year. So, as I said, are you feeling less wealthy? Of course, wages growth is an important driver of inflation because wages are a large share of firms' costs. If wages growth exceeds productivity growth, and then firms raise prices to preserve margins and profitability, this can drive inflation high. Alternatively, if inflation is already high for some other reasons, then the relationship between wages and prices can be the mechanism by which high inflation persists, since workers often seek larger wage rises when inflation is increasing and is expected to remain high for a protracted period to compensate for declining purchasing power, which in turn increases firms' costs. So at the very least, we can expect a tussle between wages and inflation to be a thing in 2023, and probably more industrial disputes around the place as well. But the fundamental problem I've got is that the architect of the inflation problem in the first place, the RBA, is now trying to pass the buck and blame us for inflation. That is not right. It's not fair. And I think the RBA does need to change its tune. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.